And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we have an exciting show. John Burroughs is coming up, and he's going to be talking about what's been going on the last few years since he was on the show last, and I don't know if there's anything new in Rendlesham Forest, but we're definitely going to be talking about Rendlesham Forest, that's for sure. Our shows, as you probably know, are now live streaming on YouTube, and one of the changes that we are making is we always send out our newsletter. And that newsletter goes out the day after our show. Now we're going to be sending out the newsletter the day of our show with the upcoming guest. That way you get an opportunity to watch the show live if you would like. So you can sign up on that mailing list, which is right on podcastufo.com, right on the sidebar. And you will get one letter per week. I'm not going to flood you with email, newsletters or anything like that. So the Everything Else show is added to the supporters RSS feed for shows, and that is on YouTube as well. Next week we have Leslie Kane coming up talking about near-death experiences and possible life after death and all that, a book she has recently written, so she'll be on Monday. If anyone wants to watch that live, it will be coming up in the supporter feed as well. And thank you very much, supporters, for supporting the show. Anyone can help out at $2 or more per month. All that information is on podcastufo.com. This show does cost several hundred dollars a month to run, so it is very much appreciated when people help us out here. And that will do it for me, Alejandro. What's going on?
Oh, this and that.
This and that and the other? We're interested in the other.
The other. Oh, yeah. The other. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I was prepared for this and that.
Okay. Well,
awkward.
Shuffle through your notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, there's some good stuff this week.
Great.
There really is.
I know there is.
Great even. Great stuff.
All right. So
go ahead. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, this is a cool one from, have you heard of John Greenwald?
Never. Yes, of course I have. And,
you have.
Good. I got to meet him last year. Yes.
Oh, you did. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. Great kid. He's not so much a kid anymore. I think he might even be in his 30s and he's a father now. But he was a kid when he started doing all of this. And what was it that he did? He would do Freedom of Information Act requests to get all kinds of information out. Now he has over a million pages of declassified information on his website, and his latest additions are some files from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And essentially what this is, they're called the NRC, and they monitor the safety of nuclear reactors and stuff like that, and that's what they do. So he asked them for their UFO files. And it wasn't that long ago. And surprisingly, he said quicker than normal, he actually got a response and he got 43 pages of documents.
Isn't that amazing? Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool. So pretty quickly. Now, there wasn't a whole lot there. It sounds like a lot, 43 pages. But most of these pages had to deal with one particular case. And the last two seemed to deal with two separate ones, or just two inquiries they had received. So not as interesting. However, the case that is mostly featured in these files is extraordinary and my humble opinion. I think it's really good. So what this case entails is a report that they received in 2010 from a former security officer. This security officer worked at Cooper Nuclear Station. And essentially, it's a power plant. And in Nebraska, he submitted this report in 2010, although he remembered the account from the late 80s. He just had felt that he didn't believe it had gotten properly reported. So for some reason, in 2010, he's thinking, hey, you know what? I better make sure that I report that and make sure it got properly reported. So that's essentially what he sent in. He was like, you know, this should have been reported. But his sighting is pretty cool. So while he was at the intake structure one night, now this power plant is right off of the Missouri River, and it's actually almost practically in the river, which is which has caused controversy in the past about flooding and stuff like this, because it juts out into this river. And I mean, I would be concerned about contamination and things like this, but they probably use the water for cooling. But anyways. Oh, yeah. At the intake, which is where, you know, I'm sure it's taking in water, one night when he observed an unidentified flying object fly down the Missouri River, it was about 150 feet in the air. It hovered in front of the intake. He saw it for a few minutes. Then he called another security guard who also saw it. And then together they saw it turn and go back up the river. And that was it. So pretty shocking that this had happened, you know, that flowing this closely. But it happened again. You're supposed to like make some sort of expression of, whoa.
I can't tell, actually, if you want me to be frank with you, I was thinking we had Skype issues, the hesitation thing, because it's been happening a little bit.
Oh, no, no. That was a...
That was a dramatic pause? Effect.
Yeah, no. It was a dramatic pause.
Okay, can we do that? Let's just do that over again. It went up the river.
Yeah, so it went up the river and disappeared.
What?
And then, but this is what's really cool. So, is that the next evening, it happened again. Yeah, huh?
Wow.
Oh, this time at first when it happened, he didn't call anybody. The UFO came up the river again, but this time it went into a protected area and it hovered above one of the reactor buildings. He said he could see it was triangular in shape. He believed that the object was roughly a third the size of the reactor building, which, of course, those are very large buildings.
They are.
Since it was in the protected area, he called the security break room, which is, I guess, where all the security guards were. He was the only one working at the time. They came out, and they saw the object as well. It hovered for a few minutes, and then it exited the protected area and returned back up to the river, back up the river to the north, just like it had the previous night. And that was it. He never saw it again, but pretty crazy. So, of course, that's a big deal when some unknown object, you know, comes in, hovers, and then flies off, you know, over a nuclear power plant. So he thought, you know, this is a big deal. It needs to be reported. Now, in these papers, the NRC actually did some investigation. In particular, a gentleman by the name of Nick Taylor, who is a senior resident inspector. When he sent off information in one of these letters, he said he couldn't find any records that corroborated this account. However, he said that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. He said reporting these days is much better than it used to be. He gave an example that he looked for some reports between January 1, 1986 and December 31st, 1989. The witness said he believed it happened sometime in that period. The investigator said there were only 1,000 reports total overall. However, he says these days we report much more thoroughly and there's about 10,000 reports a year. So he wasn't surprised he couldn't find anything because just people didn't fill out reports back then for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say that regarding the investigation of this case, it's going to be one wild ride, is what he put. So we don't know much beyond that. He said he did talk to. So the other witnesses, the other security guards that were hanging out in the break room are hanging out in that break room to this day. So I guess, well, at least in 2010, when this was investigated and reported, those guys still work there. All of the original witnesses, just this one guy who reported it is the only one who was retired. So they spoke with the other witnesses, but unfortunately, we don't have any information as to what they had said. That was apparently forwarded to an ARB, which is a review board, and so they have that information. But pretty incredible report, I think, huh?
I do too. You know, I always am fascinated by anything to do with nuclear weapons and nuclear power, anything to do with UFOs, because there's definitely some type of connection there. And I wonder if Robert Hastings will be interested in trying to investigate any part of this one.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It certainly fits in his wheelhouse. And he's done some, you know, the best work in this area. So it's a great case. He ought to look into it. That's for sure.
I'm sure he probably knows about it. I'm sure probably John Greenwald would have contacted him, I would think. Maybe I'm just full of assumptions. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're making a lot of assumptions.
I think I am, too. Well,
however, he may be aware. But that makes me think I should forward him this story.
You know, why don't you go ahead and forward him this story?
Okay, great idea.
Yeah.
That is a great idea. I'll do that. So the other thing, this is kind of funny too, because the other files in these papers were essentially one person claiming that she believed that these aircraft that were nuclear powered had crashed and created essentially nuclear hotspots, which they said, no. And then another report, and here's how they summarized it. The individual expressed vague concerns about finding low-level radiation within the last year, where his daughter, whom he believes is an alien or alien transplant, passed. So that's sad.
Wow.
She passed away. In addition, the paper goes on. In addition, the individual believes that travel speed can be increased using the relativity equation with minor modifications. Finally, the individual has observed UFOs. They responded to this gentleman and essentially said, you know, those topics don't really fit into our purview of duties, and suggested that perhaps he contact the Department of Defense.
So are you saying these last stories, someone actually contacted the NRC with?
Correct.
Wow. So it makes you wonder why they even took the UFO story seriously and looked into it, you know, after getting all types of other strange reports. Of course, the guy did work at the plant, so did the other people. I guess that was the difference for sure.
Yeah, they took it very seriously. There was no indication beyond saying it would be a wild ride that they were making fun or tongue-in-cheek at all. So they did take it very seriously, which they should, coming from a security officer. But, of course, it would be very interesting to speak with that officer or some of these other witnesses. So hopefully someone will do that. Perhaps it will be myself at some point, but we'll see if anybody beats me to it or if any of us are able to talk to anyone at all.
Right. Well, I think we're getting kind of out of time-ish, sort of. I don't think we have time for another story unless you have a quick one.
Well, just very quickly, a couple of great cases. You know, Roger Marsh seems to really love plucking out the triangle UFO sightings.
Right. I
from
agree.
The MUFON, and this was a triangle sighting. So there are a couple more recent ones. So one from Virginia, and this person drew a picture of what they saw, a triangular craft with five lights on it. This was from just March 19th, so very recent. Another one is from Pennsylvania. Dauphin is the name of the city. This was in February 14th, and this person drew kind of did a graphic like a Photoshop sort of graphic of what they saw. So a great graphic. So a couple more triangular cases that you can see also, all of which you can find at openminds.tv.
Great. All right, Alejandro, thanks so much, as always, for your for your professionalism and all that stuff.
My pleasure.
All right, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, talk to you later, buddy.
All righty. So hang in, everyone. We're going to have a quick music break, and we'll be right back with John Burroughs. Hello, John, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Martin. Appreciate you bringing me on again.
Yes, I think it was I think it was 2 years ago. I believe it was in December last time we had both you and Colonel Halt on, which was actually a very popular show for us.
Right. It was definitely an interesting show. You can say that for sure.
Yeah, interesting. And so I'm glad you're back on, and you do a show now with Linda Moulton Howe, and why don't you just tell the listening audience about that, because she's a fascinating lady, and you interview different people yourself, right?
Correct. We started a show, it'll be just over a year and a half ago, on KGRA called Phenomenon Radio, and we've covered different topics, but we tried to stick a little bit to the Bentwaters case itself. We've had different people on involving that and some of the phenomena that's in Condyne and some of this other stuff that could relate to Rendlesham, but also what's going on, period, you know, in as far as the sightings and different things like that. We're on every Thursday night on KGRA from 8 to 10 Eastern, and we have a whole bunch of different guests on depending on the week and the topic and, you know, as far as where we're trying to go with different things. Right now, we've been talking about quite a bit about there might be some attempt of some kind of, I don't like the word, use the word disclosure this summer, but I call it confirmation. There may be something coming out this summer on that'll be admitted. There's been some kind of like contact with something out there in space.
Wow. You know, I think I listened to an old show on YouTube or something like that from way back in the 1950s, and there was a guy in there that was claiming that some type of contact, he was sure that it was going to happen in his lifetime and within the next year or two, and it kind of made me a little like go, oh, okay, so they've been saying it all along, you know, but maybe, just maybe, you know, I truly feel like we are drawing nearer to something, you know, maybe it's my imagination, just like it was for that gentleman way back then. But are you hearing?
Well, I was going to say, I think expectations are too high. I mean, if you just look at how the government handles everything, and this may not even come from the government directly. Obviously, more than likely, the government will have to allow it to happen as far as they'll give their blessings, but it may come through the scientific community. So much of this has kind of been low profile because of the elections we had last fall. I mean, on top of what was being covered and, you know, what could happen was more along the lines that Podesta and Hillary were going to do something after she got elected. But you had stuff coming out that there was some articles written. There was even a paper written, and I don't have the names of the scientists in front of me, but they wrote a paper that out, I forget what area out there, you know, in the solar system, they think they've received transmissions possibly from that area. NASA just came out recently and said the same thing, that, you know, there is a solar system that could support life. And Sadie jumped on it right afterwards and said they are reevaluating certain signals that come from that area based on this, you know, this discovery or whatever you want to call it, whether it was a discovery, how long they knew it, or, you know, this admission. They're going to look further into maybe there's been some signals coming from that area. So my take on this is that if you have never seen the movie Contact, watch it.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of an interesting spin on how it could all take place, but it would make the most sense. And I'm sure for the hardcore people living in ufology forever, they're not going to buy, you know, what will come out of it. But if you let the scientists come out, say they've had some kind of interaction, or they believe they had, on top of the fact that it could involve, the Chinese have launched a quantum satellite. They've confirmed that. I'm not sure what we have up there. And they're also putting a quantum computer online, that would play into this. So if you let the scientific world admit there was some kind of transmission that took place, because they all but did say that, they're pretty sure that it is, but they just had to reconfirm it. So if you did that, that would take the pressure off the government, and it would throw it into the scientists' lap of what it could mean and everything else. And then they could try to speculate on where it is, where it's coming from, have they deciphered the message and all that. And it would take some of the heat off our government for, you know, coming out and taking heated questions on disclosure. And on top of that, it also would fall into this Robert Bigelow scenario that he did 3 years ago with George Knapp, and it seems to be falling into place. He said we're probably going to get confirmation over disclosure, and that would be kind of what this would be, that there is something else out there, but we're not going to go any further with it other than that at this point.
Right. Yeah, I heard recently about those radio blasts. That's interesting, and I'm wondering how. I know that SETI is actually looking or turning their, you know, telescopes in that direction, but I feel like we've been gently led toward that direction, you know, with the starting with the Kepler telescope and all that, and just the, you know, the more identifiable Earth-like planets that seem to be found, and some interesting ones lately. Just a couple things, John. I wanted to let you know that we do have some questions. Some questions came into our forum. We also have a chat room. Someone posted a question there. I asked him to post it again a little bit later on. So we'll be taking questions. As far as the phone goes, just to let the listener know, I started the show in 2011. I wanted to make sure it was interactive with everyone. So phone calls was important to me. Some people complain about them, but phone calls have been important. Skype is not allowing me to add phone calls to the conversation, and I thought it was something wrong with my software or something like that. But going into the forums and things like that, I find out that anyone that does shows is having the same issue. Skype is not fixing it because they've done a couple of updates since then. So I'm going to get a phone line service in here somehow. I'm going to get phones, but no phone calls this evening. But again, if you're in the chat room and you're live and you'd like to ask some questions, I will ask them a little later on as we go along here. It's better actually in the second hour if you're hanging in that long. So, John, as far as I think that when you were on before, we talked about the different, it's sort of convoluted tales between a lot of different people. And there's confusion you hear, you know, quite a bit with what happened. And I know that the situation was not good with you, the way that you were so-called debriefed. And I can't even believe that drugs were used. I mean, it just doesn't even make any sense that our government would do that. I mean, it baffles me because I don't know if there's other cases. Are you familiar with other cases, not UFOs, but other cases where they use drugs to interrogate or whatever?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, this is where there's a problem, you know, as far as certain people that follow the case and different things that have happened. And even I want to throw this out about Colonel Hall. He has over and over said that he was not aware of any of that taking place right after the incident. But because Peniston under hypnosis came out and said that he was injected with sodium pentothal, but other people said it couldn't have been pentothal, it would have been amethyl, because that's the more conducive drug if it really did happen. I think Bastinza mentioned a little bit that he was taken down underground and intimidated. He never really went into, you know, as far as drugs being used on him. So there's never really been a total confirmation that that took place for sure. Colonel Hall loves to harp on that. But that's one of the issues I have with him. He says he didn't know it took place during the time. And that's always been a question of mine, is if this incident took place, he claims he never was talked to, debriefed, or anything. He wasn't aware of this going on with us, but he was the deputy base commander. And if they brought these people in, and according to some, there was a group of us that were brought in and worked over, how could they not have known something was taking place?
It just seems like that would, you know.
And the second part of it is, his part about saying he was never talked to or debriefed doesn't make any sense either, because he had an interaction out in the field with something, to include a beam of light coming down at his feet with the tape. Now, he was questioned on that one time where, you know, they go, could you have been? He goes, no. He goes, what? They go, why? He goes, well, several weeks later, I wrote down everything that happened, and I still remember it that way. And he says, well, according to what you said, other people said, it happened immediately after. So who's to say that you couldn't have been messed with, you know, right away, and what you wrote down 3 or 4 weeks later is what you remember based on what they did to you?
Yes, I think you and I may have had a conversation about what I thought I heard Colonel Hall say to me in North Carolina about.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, we Colonel Hall and I leave it at this point where I think that I heard him say that they used drugs on him, and he says he never said it. And then we're parting as friends in that way. We're not getting a big argument about it. But, you know, it is a little weird what you just said, why he wasn't debriefed. I mean, he was right there, and he was commanding the whole situation. You know, so it is rather bizarre that.
Well, yeah, it goes even deeper than that. As far as he just came out with a book, I think it was last fall.
Yeah.
Called The Hall Perspective. And it was typical Colonel Hall. I mean, as far as going after Larry Warren, and that I've always found that, actually, not right away, but over the years I've watched this, that it just seems like anytime something interesting starts coming out about the case, those two seem to go at each other. And most of the time it is driven by Colonel Hall, not by Warren himself. But it turns into this big, you know, back and forth thing, and we get sidetracked from what actually could have been at the area and the base, what we could have encountered, what went on. But as far as the part about him telling the story, when you listen to him talk about what he remembers happening, it's fascinating. I mean, here the man was out there with a 5-man team originally, and they saw stuff in the sky, and they had a beam of light come down to their feet. He was recording this and stuff, and that makes that, you know, that's huge. And as far as the fact that you have a lieutenant colonel out there that documented this, you know, that makes a lot. That's important to the case. And to have people understand it, whatever you want to believe happened, whether it was ET, time travelers, us, or the phenomenon that they talk about in Condyne, or a mixture of all three or four or whatever, something did happen to us. But what ends up happening all the time is we get into this slugfest, especially him and Warren, and it sidetracks from the incident itself, and it never really gets around to let's move forward to get as many people to come out to remember what they heard, what they saw, or what they know, and go forward. So it hurts the case as far as the way he comes after Warren. But he also likes to come after the rest of us, too, and say we're not, you know, reliable witnesses because of the fact that he feels that we were interrogated and everything else. But then he provides no proof to that matter. You know what I mean? And when I say that, I'm not saying that maybe something didn't happen to us, but why does he want to reinforce that and say he never was messed with, trust him and trust him only, when you can take some of his story as far as how he's tried to go after us, to include the fact that he lied about Adrian and I's participation in the incident early on, and just now in this latest book, he's admitted now that we were involved with this party and we went forward of him. And he even admitted he can't say for sure what happened to us once we went forward.
Right, right. So what do you recall from the debriefing that you actually had?
That's the thing. I don't ever remember being debriefed. Now,
really?
I think Bestenza at one point told me, we talk occasionally. He told me, he said he saw me up there, I think it was on Monday, up there at the where the security operations was, the desk, the law enforcement desk was across the street. So he saw me up there at one point. The only thing I ever remembered was simply we were on break after it happened Thursday night into Friday morning. We were on break Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I went out there, obviously, early Friday morning, and then I was back out there again Saturday night into Sunday. Now, I remember when we came to work Monday, we were on, before we went on break on Friday, the shift commander said we're probably going to have to write something up. Came back, they wanted us to write something up. So I remember going and seeing with Peniston, Kabansek, and I, we went in and saw Colonel Halt, then Colonel Conrad, and Colonel Williams, each one at a time, and with our statements that we wrote up. And Peniston did most of the talking, and basically we just got told that it was being looked into, and just to stay quiet, and they'd let us know if they needed anything from us. And I was in airman first class, and I just went on my way, and I couldn't explain it anyway, and there was a lot of people of higher rank than me that said leave it alone, so I did. So
now I asked last time Colonel Halt was on this show, I asked him this question. I'm going to ask you the same. And sure. Is that if this hadn't been brought to light, would you have talked about it publicly, or would you have just kept quiet about it?
Well, you know, if it never came out and I didn't have any health issues, yeah, I probably never would have talked about it. But I can't say I wouldn't have that later on down the line when I started having my health issues, that I would not have ever come forward with it or ever talked about it. I don't know. I mean, because of the fact that I think some of the reason why things happened the way they did was I was public about some of the stuff, you know, as far as what was going on and what was taking place. So if my health was fine and the incident had just happened and it never seen the light of day, no, I would not have brought it up. There would have been no reason to.
Yeah. I can't imagine, though, what it would be like for you to be the lone duck trying to bring this up, if it didn't come out and you had health issues and you came out with it separately or you broke the story, that would be, especially years later, it took that long for your health issues to start. That would have been a tough road to hoe, actually.
Well, yeah, that's true, but there has been declassified documents that admitted, you know, talk about Rendlesham and Project Condyne.
Yeah. That's
so,
right. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know if they could have kept it quiet for so many different people knew about it, you know, and stuff like that. The thing that would have probably made it harder to move forward with would have been if the Halt memo hadn't surfaced. That part, yeah. I think that one document was the document that forced a lot of hands, I think.
And it sure did, yeah.
Even if it would have come out, because you had the women working on it in the UK, you had Barry Greenwood and Larry Fawcett working on it in the States, Ray Boucher and Scott Colbert knew about it, because it was actually before the memo came out, it was already being talked about. So it wasn't really ever kept quiet. So, but if you're just saying if the incident would have taken place, nothing would have ever come out on it, no one knew about it, and I didn't have health issues, yeah, I would have stayed quiet.
Yeah, wow. Now, you mentioned that you really don't remember a debriefing. Do you remember if you were ever told to never talk about it from any?
Well, that's what I said when we went in and saw the command level. You know, it was Conrad and then Williams. It was just kind of along the lines is that we're looking into this. you know, you need to just kind of be stay quiet about it. Don't, you know, I didn't get directly told it was top secret, but Peniston implied it afterwards when we walked out and kind of the conversation in what place. But yeah, it was clearly we were letting know that just we just needed to let it go, leave it alone. If they needed anything from us, they would get back to us.
Now, there was on the second night that this happened in the chat room, says, what's your best guess as to what happened on the second night when they said he was brought up on board the craft, getting sucked up into the light in front of Adrian? I remember hearing bits and pieces of this, but...
Right, Adrian did. Actually, we did an interview with him on Phenomenon, and I'd known about this for quite a while. That had been one of the kind of the sore points for me over the years, because Halt went on the attack. This was even before Adrian and I even knew it was out. In other words, I went on my way. I went to my next assignment, left there, went to another assignment, and then I started getting phone calls about it when News of the World hit. And then these investigators started talking to me, and I was brought up. I go, why are you talking to me? Where, you know, they wouldn't give me the whole story. They wanted to know what, try to get stuff out of me. Chuck DeCarl got a hold of me too, but it basically came to light that they knew I was out there on one night, and then there had been talk that I was out there on a different night with Halt, but Halt was denying it and was bad mouthing Adrian and I, and just saying that we were never even there. Then if you listen to the tape, you hear my name on it, Adrian's on it. And it's just slowly been broken down over the years to now where he's had to admit we were not only there with him, but that we went forward of him. As far as Adrian saying that, yeah, he said on the radio show, he said that he saw me go into it and he saw me like I phased out and I was gone. So it's hard to say what it was. I mean, there has been a lot of good research done recently on technology in the area, what it is, declassified documents. I mean, it's possible it was something we were working on even.
Yeah. So many mysteries anyway to this whole thing to begin with. So your health issues, is it something you're free to talk about or would – be interested?
No, I mean, well, do you have a question or?
Yeah. First of all, I understand your military records were completely lost or not found. So let's talk about that. And then the process that you had to get through in order to get some help on this.
Okay. Well, what ended up happening was it just happened after we went over in 2010 for the 30th. When I came back, I wasn't feeling well. But prior, going back to the very beginning so I could set stage, right after the incident, I didn't feel well. And I had some vision problems. And when I also went in, my mouth turned white, but I didn't feel well. And when I went in, the doctor found a heart murmur. And to set the stage, you can get in the Air Force if you had a heart murmur. And there's been, you know, skeptics or whatever you want to call them, say, well, you know, they might have missed it. Well, from the immediate time that they first found it right after the incident, they said it was one of the loudest they've ever heard. Now, my entry-level physical, no heart issues, right after the incident, they found this heart murmur. Shortly after that, they sent me to Wright-Patterson, which it still may not mean anything, but not knowing at the time, but later on you find out this is where they look into some of this stuff, especially maybe if you had some involvement with technology or were affected by something. So I went to Wright-Pat. They confirmed I had a heart murmur, mitral valve, prolapse, regurgitation. So I had a decent type of heart issue that came on right after the incident. So that was established. That was in my medical records, okay? So when I got out in 88 of active, it's in my exit physical. Yes, he's now developed heart issues. And it says in there, I developed heart issues, okay? Why on active duty? Wasn't before coming in, was while on active duty. So I had these two documents. But what happened was, after I came back in 10, I started not feeling well. I just thought it was bronchitis or something from being over in England and, you know, I got sick. Well, when I went into urgent care, I was having trouble catching my breath finally. They found out I was in congestive heart failure, AFib. Wow. So they took me in, they got my heart back in rhythm, and the doctor at the time wanted to know, you know, when I first developed all this and stuff. It was going back and forth. And I told him it happened in the military. So he said, well, I'd like to see those records. I'd like to look at the records and see what the initial diagnosis was, the echo and everything else. And I said, all right. So what I ended up doing was going to Senator Kyle's office, and I had them request my military, so I had a record of it, my military records and my health records. Well, the initial response back was my records weren't where they belonged, which the lady, most people that they think the senator directly does all this, it's not what goes on. It's the clerks, you know, the clerk or the staff, I want to call them staff, that work for the senator that does the work. So I just got this letter back that the Air Force had responded back, said my records weren't where they were supposed to be. So my response back was, well, what does that mean? What are you going to do? And they said, well, we're going to dig further. So she made more inquiries, and they got back a portion of my medical, or my, not my medical, my personnel records. But one of the things that stood out right away was there was no records of me being in England at Bentwaters. The records all started after I was back in the States. But I mean, looking at them at the beginning, you're like, whatever, I don't know why all my records aren't there, but they weren't. And then she, when she sent that, those records with me, in the letter she put, I believe your medical records are classified. And so she said that to give her a call.
You there, John?
Okay, you there?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, okay, you're back. That's good. That's all I care about.
She said I need to go down to the VA and file for disability, because that would force them to answer more questions. So I did. So this was in the summer. Kyle was not going for re-election in the fall, and I didn't hear anything back after I went and submitted all the paperwork, took it to them. I did meet with her briefly when I get the paperwork. She said a couple things to me that was interesting. She said that she knows something bad happened to us, but she feels that she's only going to be able to do her best to get me medical care, but don't expect to get my records and don't expect to get an answer on what took place.
Wow.
So that was a little interesting. So November came, hadn't heard nothing yet, sent him a letter. They responded back that he was retiring, that they were unable to get what they wanted, recommended I go to Senator McCain's office. So they forwarded my whole pack at the McCain's office. They were able to get me in for my initial disability review. When I went in there, the doctor asked me point blank, after asking me some questions about my issues I was claiming, she just looked at me and she said, well, everything you're claiming couldn't have happened to you in the military, because there's no records of you being in the military during that time frame, medically or personnel wise. Yeah. So I'm looking at it, I go, what do you mean? She goes, you didn't come in until 1982. These are the records I have in front of me saying that.
Wow.
Like, well, I came in 79. And so I showed her some pay records I had in a briefcase I was carrying. She looked at her eyes, got kind of big. She goes, I go, well, what are you going to do now? She says, well, there's nothing I can really do other than write up what's available to me. That'll be up to the pay grade higher than me. It's like, fine. So 3 months later, they came back and denied my disability based on the fact that I was not in the Air Force from 79 to 82, provided a DD Form 214 showing that I wasn't, that I came in 82. So they altered my DD Form 214. Okay. And that there were no medical records for me from 79 to 82 either. So this was the denial letter, and it was all spelled out in there, right? So, and what they were emphasizing too was, they acknowledged the fact that my claim was I was injured in the line of duty at Bentwaters in Rendlesham Forest, but that I couldn't have been because I wasn't in the Air Force then. So that was, McCain's office went nuts. I mean, they went nuts. I mean, they couldn't believe this was going on. And so they started pushing harder. I had to meet with some people up higher in the staff now. I was talking to now the people way close to him, and I actually got to meet him at one point too and talk to him about it. But what they were able to do eventually was they did finally get my DD Form 214 to show I was in the Air Force in 79. But the comment was from the staffers was, we were able to get them to change your DD form 214, but don't expect your medical records. You're not going to get them. Okay, they're classified. So I'm like, okay. But being as the fact is that they now had to admit I was in 79, and at that point, we were already threatening. I had a lawyer working with me out of Mississippi, Pat Frasconia, a really good guy. He wasn't a VA lawyer, but what we were going to do was we were going to go to federal court and file, we were going to file a lawsuit, you know, asking for my medical records because the VA wasn't taking responsibility for me and my civilian doctors couldn't treat me because they didn't know what I was dealing with. So all that was going on, and so they started moving forward with that as far as they admitted I was in. And then we also got a VA lawyer involved in this, and then he was blown away by it too. But another factor came into play. We went to this, well, I believe it was called the Citizens Hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, with Steve Bassett.
Yeah.
And so we went to the Citizen Hearing, and we did a presentation. It was Nick Pope, Pat Frasconia, the attorney, myself, and Peniston was there. And we did a presentation, and the presentation we did was on the incident, but what happened to us physically, and provided information to them. And they were moved by it, and they were even shocked that there was a classified records section where they kept military records classified medical. They, a lot of them didn't know it. A couple of them did, but several of them didn't. So they wrote a letter. They had two letters written. They had one for President Obama and one for the VA. And they signed it, and they sent it into both of them. And right after that all happened, all of a sudden, Pat got a phone call from an ex-CIA guy, or I shouldn't say ex. He was had been in the company, and then he was a consultant now for them. And he stepped forward and met with Pat, then met with me, then met with Peniston. And he supplied some information, including a letter with some data in it, that besides that and everything else that was going on, that was handed to the VA. And the next thing you know, all of a sudden, I'm getting medical care. I'm getting in front of a surgeon. They're doing surgery on me. And then with all the other stuff going on, eventually they granted me disability, and the disability was granted to me based on the fact that I was injured in the line of duty in Rendlesham Forest. And the press release that came out was de facto the U.S. government admits UFOs exist, because that was what the case has been labeled. You know what I mean? So the evidence there that I presented, the government accepted and said that, yes, you were injured by whatever you encountered in Rendlesham Forest.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That really is something that's groundbreaking as far as, you know, something like that happening. Where the government
right, but they never admitted. And Billy Cox, the reporter out of Florida, we provided him all the documentation showing him exactly, you know, the case file that was presented as far as what we were presented, what the VA agreed to. And he wrote an article on it, and he saw the information. They admitted that my case was based on injuries in the line of duty at Rendlesham Forest. So they admitted I was hurt there, but what they haven't admitted to is what it really was or what was taking place.
Yeah. Well, you can only assume, right? So a question in the message board, Adrian, I never know how to pronounce his last name, Bastenza?
Yeah, Bastenza, yeah.
He once said, now this is allegedly once said, because someone's writing this in the message board, that Halt was at the landing on the third night. Had you ever heard that?
Well,
the landing that you were at, obviously.
Well, yeah. Originally, the guys that went out there was Colonel Hall, Monroe Nevels, disaster preparedness. Master Sergeant Ball was the oncoming security flight chief. So it actually happened, I believe, started on swing ship. By the time they got everybody together, the security flight chief on the incoming flight went out there. Lieutenant England was out there. And he would have been the shift commander on swing shift, and he held over. And then Bastenza was in that group. And then I met up with Halt after he'd been out there for a while and went forward. And, yeah, this is the big discrepancy that there's a gap in the tape. Halt went out of his way to say that Adrian and I weren't there, and over the years admitted that finally now we were there, and then we went forward, and he says he can't say that something didn't happen to us when we went forward. But that is the area, I think, pretty much that he's always tried to cover up as far as keep it from ever going anywhere, and that they did see whatever happened to Adrian and I. Now, whether or not they were, how close they were behind Adrian and I when we went forward or not, I don't know. But that would be the whole thing in there. And there's a gap in the tape where nothing happens for quite a while. And then all of a sudden he says they're heading back to base.
Wow. Now, so, do you remember actually walking toward the craft?
Well, I don't call it a craft. I always remember it as lights. You know, in other words, Peniston described it as a triangular craft. Adrian called it lights until I went into it. Then he said it exploded into something that looked kind of triangular with blue lights in it. But I got him and I were running forward towards it. And what happened was whatever it was started coming back towards the Halt landing party when I met up with him. And Halt asked me, is that what you saw the first night? And it was in a distance too, but it looked kind of like something when we were looking at it from a distance. But this time it was like coming over the top of some trees out in front of us down in towards the field. So I'm just like, I don't know. I'd like to get a closer look. So he let Bastinza and I go forward. And we started moving towards it. We were running. Adrian went down to the ground. He said he felt like something pushed him down, held him down. And then he described it. He saw me go into it. I phased out like I was gone or almost gone. And then one of us was going on and exploded. Then whatever it was, then I reappeared and was gone. And all I remember was getting close to it, and then it was gone.
That's all you remember. And
yes.
What about that night afterwards? Do you remember how you felt, or did you feel like there was something else, you know, wrong other than, you know, the sighting itself?
Well, the crazy thing is that Adrian and I've talked about this, and I remember when it was gone, I was standing there, I saw him. We had a brief conversation kind of like about what took place, and we started walking back, and him and I have no memory from that point until the next day.
Wow.
We don't know where we got taken back, you know, how we got back, who we met up with, or what happened. Now, I don't remember anything until the next evening, which was Sunday night, and I was out on the flight line in the post office. And I saw the C-5 came in that I've talked about. You know, I was like, I was checking mail and there was a C-5. And Adrian never really explained much other than he remembers the next afternoon. So I can't tell you, and neither can Adrian for sure what happened. There has been a new witness that's come forward recently that came on our radio show and talked about it. She worked in supply, and she said that on all three nights, she was sent out and picked us up as she was out there as the incident was taking place, and transported us back and had it. And we were checked out by a doctor. She called him in a white coat. And the interesting thing was a couple things about her story that was very interesting was Peniston, on more than one occasion, including with Hall, myself, and on other documentaries, he completely went to a totally different area than what I remember as being at in our statement support. And he would go right outside the East Gate and say it was right on the fence line. Well, she said the first night when she came out there, we were up by that fence line. Yeah. And she also said that Halt was also taken back and looked over on the third night. And Halt went ballistic on that, but then he's gone around and talked a little bit about how he does believe we were all checked out and worked over by the guy she describes in the white coat. But again, he believes all of us were all worked over except that he wasn't, to include the fact that we were all taken away on the third night again, except for him. But how could he not know we were taken away and say that we were, but he wasn't then? Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's kind of supported her story, and then taken shots at her story. But the most part of what he took shots at was that he wasn't taken in. He wasn't worked over. You know, the rest of us were, but he wasn't.
Yeah. Do you think, would you give him like this that, you know, perhaps it's just has no memory of it happening?
Well, interesting enough, a guy that he worked with for a while, they were trying to put together a movie, and he was working with the guy, and he was the one that Hall came when he came out and talked about. It was right around 10 that he'd always told people behind the scenes it was more technical and look at other areas. But then all of a sudden around 10, he came out and said it was ET and we're not alone. But his statement kind of supports Condyne in a lot of ways, other than he said he thinks it's ET. But the guy that he was working with came out and said later that Hall told him he has no memory of certain things and may have some missing time, but then Hall came back and denied it later. And there's been some other things that a couple of researchers are working on that I don't want to say much about now, other than we'll see what they come forward with, where he made some statements early on to some people that may come out that will support some things about the fact that he may have been worked over and he saw other things that he hasn't admitted to. So,
wow. Yeah. That is something. So I just want to throw a question at you that's in our on our forum, and that as a result of the UFO events that took place over the base, do you think that, this is for an opinion, do you think senior military staff have been briefed on how to deal with this scenario and contain any information leaking to the public if it occurred at another military base?
You know, there's people that have done research on that. I think somebody found some documents that were out there that were that the Air Force had that how to deal with the UFO incident. It's hard to say. I mean, there's been enough incidents that have taken place over the years, you know, that the Air Force has had strange things around the base and their personnel involved with, that I would assume that if it's not at the local level, that if it's ones that's up channel, that then they go into, you know, defense mode as far as how to handle it and public affairs handles it. The other thing was in Condyne, it talked about how that wing commanders were briefed on a phenomenon because of the interaction with aircraft, and they were briefed and their pilots were briefed on how to deal with it because there had actually been aircraft brought down by this phenomenon.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. yeah, it all, as far as you remember, when the events all started, had anyone ever talked about anything happening there previously before that?
Prior to the incident, no, I didn't know anything about that. Other than there were stories about the place being haunted, Easton Charlie, and witches in the area and some weird stuff like that. But I'd never heard any stories of UFO activity. But after the incident took place, over the years talking to different people, there were different people that had different encounters. Way back even in, you know, like 78, there was some stuff that happened at Woodbridge that happened around the WSA that was active at the time with the F-4s being there, but then it got deactivated after the F-4s left and the A-10s came in. So there was some stuff that took place there. There was some stuff that took place at Bentwaters. There was the 56 incident that happened at Bentwaters where they picked something up on radar and they chased it supposedly with aircraft. So yeah, there had been stuff that had happened prior to us, and even a couple of guys that we've interviewed that right before our incident saw different things and stuff, strange things happened. But did I know about this prior to the incident? No. Have I found out about it since? Yes.
Yeah. Well, on the other side, I understand there's still things happening there. Do you follow any of that?
Yeah, I deal with people that are living over there. I talk to different people all the time. And yeah, there's still strange stuff. When we went back in 10, we had a guy come down, an engineer come down with equipment, and we filmed some weird stuff that was out in the field. And we had some EM readings and some strange stuff that went on. So yeah, there's still strange stuff going on that can't be totally explained,
yeah,
you know, to this day. So
right. And I heard you say earlier, you know, I know that Chuck thinks that it's most likely ET.
Well, he made a press release on it, so.
Yeah, yeah, he said that on this show as well when he was on. And you sound like you're kind of confused about what it could be. And I don't blame you. I mean, I would be too. I guess I'm going to ask you, what do you think the most likely possibility of what happened on those nights was?
Well, I can tell you, before I've done this research, I've always felt like it was something that we were doing that caused something to happen. And what I mean by happening is, I can't tell you what we dealt with, but there was something else there other than just us. And so much research now shows the area, declassified documents show that there was all kinds of special weapons programs going on. Special access programs were taking place right outside the base, where it was Ariat Bauzi, Marlstrom Heath, the BT site that was connected to Marlstrom Heath. You had Orford Nest. You had all this stuff that was there. They're working on EM fields and different technologies, plasmas and stuff. And then you had Condyne that got declassified, where they said we were exposed. That was one of the documents that helped me get my disability, was the fact that in Condyne it said that we were exposed to UAP radiation. So there was some – Condyne admits there's a phenomenon, and that phenomenon was present, you know, in that area. So my take is I'm not saying I don't have an opinion either way on ET. Okay. I don't believe that we're the only ones in the universe, but I've never seen any hardcore proof. And what I mean by proof is there's never been an explanation of what it is that we'd be dealing with, other than Condyne came the closest and said there's a phenomenon that exists. And that, as far as time travelers, well, could it be possible, I guess, if in the future they came back, maybe, you know, and, you know, so there you go. I'm not sure, but I do believe we were doing something. I don't know if we were indirectly doing something that caused the problem, or we were zapping this energy field that's there. There's also the possibility, too, we were working on satellite technology as far as bringing them down, and that we may have also zapped a Soviet satellite during that 3-day period and brought it down in the area.
So that's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you can support the show for only $2 or more a month, and you get to listen to all the full shows, archives, plus the Everything Else show. There's some great ones coming up. Next week, we have Ryan Sprague. That will be a fun show. And remember, you can always watch the full entire show for free just by visiting podcastufo.com on Wednesday evenings at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can watch it actually on YouTube live stream. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week. Remember to keep your eyes to the sky.